Tonight I was teaching a class on the path of the Bodhisattva, and tonight's talk was about generosity, the paramita of generosity. And when I was talking about generosity, I said Gampopa teaches that there are three ways to be generous. One is to offer material things, you know, resources of some kind. Money, house, clothes, food, that kind of thing. And one is to remove fear or to offer fearlessness or freedom from fear. And the third one is to offer teachings of the truth, which Gampopa called Dharma. And a student asked, can you say more about offering fearlessness? So maybe we should talk. What is fearlessness? You know, if we're going to offer it, it's helpful to know what it is. It's the quality or the state, you could say, of being without fear. It's also the courage, having the courage or cultivating the courage to confront situations that might normally create anxiety or fear in you or other people. So we might say, if we were talking about a fearless person, they're brave or they're bold or they're daring. And we'd be talking about that they had those qualities, brave and bold and daring, as they approach challenges or risks. And they have a kind of confidence and maybe determination. And they have that in spite of potential dangers or uncertainties. So fearlessness doesn't necessarily mean that it's a complete absence of fear. But it's more like you have the ability to act courageously in spite of the fear. And of course, that's a spectrum of feeling and behavior and ability. Fearlessness involves a willingness to take risks and to confront one's fears. And I don't mean confront in an aggressive way, but to acknowledge, to own, to explore, to be curious, as we always do in practice with our emotions and qualities, habits. Fearlessness is often in culture and in literature associated also with strength of character or resilience or a willingness to step outside of one's comfort zone in the pursuit of a dream or goal or an ideal. That feels a little bit not exactly like the kind of fearlessness that we were talking about in class, but it's also not that. There's also a kind of spiritual fearlessness, and that in part comes from understanding a higher and more complete truth, I think. When we only know a fragmented and confused truth, I think that contributes to fear. You think about someone who hasn't had a lot of life experience. They haven't had the privilege maybe of education or travel. And so it's not uncommon for someone in that situation to be more fearful. Fearlessness, if you understand a complete truth, which is part of our goal in Buddhism, you know, to understand non-duality, non-fragmented truth, the more one begins to understand that, the more one can trust and feel open and comfortable in all kinds of situations that maybe have plagued them with fear all their life. Fearlessness can come and does come sometimes, I think, from knowing that you can learn to be safe in situations that felt scary or harmful before. And in fact, that's one of the ways that we can give fearlessness to people is we can teach them, give them skills to feel safe, to check out and see, is this an old habit or emotion arising, some old trauma or something? Or am I actually safe or not safe in this moment? A matter of mindfulness and discernment, you could say, that could arise in practice. It's also true there's a kind of spiritual fearlessness as the ego recedes, you know, as we come closer and closer and begin to know our true self or divine self or sacred self. That aspect, that quality or that personage is more free of fear because it's more free of a desire and attachment. And I think that can impact our comfort with the, what should I call it, the fact of uncertainty and constant change. So one important piece of one feeling fearless or one giving someone else the gift that is the freedom from fear or the potential freedom for fear. It's often, fear is often directly related to a sense of aloneness in one's life, loneliness. And so even though you might not be able to cause them to feel completely fearless, even reducing the causes and conditions in their life that lead them to have fear can give them breathing room to experiment with what it's like to have a little courage, a little faith, a little trust. And all of those things are part of the conditions of liberation. And so every drop in the ocean of those things leads someone towards fearlessness. So maybe you offer that to them and maybe they recognize it and maybe they don't, but they don't have to recognize it for it to accumulate. Courage is maybe the antithesis of fear, right? Courage and fearlessness, we might say, are synonymous or at least related. And courage often involves acknowledging our fear. And that's a big part of spiritual practice. We look at fear. Remember tonight I was talking about contacting an experience. So you look at fear and you feel it in your body and you acknowledge, yes, I have this fear. Even sometimes maybe you have it when there's nothing to be afraid of because that energy was patterned in the body and the mind and the heart at some time when there was something to be afraid of. So somebody who acts courageously in the face of fear is demonstrating a form of fearlessness. They may feel afraid, but they don't let that fear paralyze them or prevent them from trying things, taking action, experimenting, speaking out. But they kind of move through the fear with determination and resolve. And a big piece of that is the ability to some degree, big or small, to let go and to have the experience that you're having rather than shutting down from that experience, for example. So we could say that fearlessness in some way is about being able to transcend fear and not allowing it to dictate one's actions or decisions. And it's about facing challenges in a kind of head-on way, even when there's uncertainty involved or risk involved. So you wanted to know more, I think, about what I meant when I talked about the generosity of offering fearlessness, and you can't really give another person, well, maybe a great being could, but I certainly don't think I could directly give someone else fearlessness as a quality of mind. But you can support and encourage them to cultivate courage, to cultivate resilience, even when they're afraid. So I can think of some examples, for example, like being there as a supportive friend or a mentor, or even a supportive stranger, a neighbor or community member. And you could let them know that you believe in their abilities and that you're there to support them no matter what challenges they have. I think that's a big part of fear, is that we're afraid we'll fail, and when we fail, we'll be alone. Let's see what else. I think that you could encourage the person to reflect on their fears, to think about how those fears are holding them back, to help them identify. We often talk about pattern material, to help them identify old patterns or habits or limiting beliefs that might be contributing to their fear. To do that requires that they trust you a little bit, and that you be highly non-judgmental. But as practitioners, we could maybe offer that. You could offer practical advice, right? If you've had panic attacks and someone else is suffering from that, you could share your experiences of how you worked with that, how you faced your fear, and if you were able to overcome or mitigate those panics. That might be helpful. That would be a way of offering a degree of fearlessness. And sometimes people are afraid because they set goals or intentions in such a way that they believe that they can't possibly succeed. And so one thing you can do is help them dial that back a little bit. You'll hear almost every Dharma teacher, when they talk about some grand thing like bodhicitta, they'll say also, remember, we have to practice where we are. And one way you can do that, of course, is to break the progress down into small, kind of manageable chunks so that it's not so intimidating. You know, and if you're part of a community for a long time, and someone's been telling you they're trying to have success, certainly you can remark when you see it. You know, you can celebrate their success. Even you wouldn't have to say something. You could just leave a flower in their shoe, you know, in the hallway. When we work towards fearlessness or experiment with fearlessness, inevitably, we will be discouraged at some point, because as we work towards it, we are likely creating some sort of expectation in our mind, you know, what it might look like. The more we create expectation, the more likely we are to be disappointed. You could even say that expectation is premeditated disappointment. You can also, and this is very helpful in the community, you can be an embodiment of fearlessness. You can be fearless to be kind to someone who is an outsider in the group. You could be fearless to say something that needed to be said in a group that maybe didn't want to hear it. These are all, you know, examples of being a kind of, I want to say role model, but that's not quite the right word. I want to say to be the embodiment of fearlessness, so that people could see it, and also when you're embodying it, they feel it, right? Maybe part of what you can give, and this is in line with the paramitas, so it's on my mind, you could be patient, you could be understanding. You know, overcoming fear is a gradual process, and developing or arriving at or stepping into genuine fearlessness has to be done at one's own pace, with one's own skill and opportunities. It's a matter really of effort, and it's also to some degree a matter of karma. It doesn't help, we know for sure, to say, just get over your fears. That is not generosity, right? That's something else. That's almost the opposite of generosity. It's like putting a heavy load on somebody that also already has the heavy load. And another way you could remove fear or offer fearlessness, I'm kind of seeing them as similar, if not the same, is that you could remove the causes of fear. So, you know, I have a guy that I buy Street Roots newspapers from. And we talk on a regular basis, and I buy paper from him, and I try to read those papers and talk to him about what's in the paper. So he knows that his work is seen and appreciated and that his voice is heard. And sometimes he tells me about his fear. No, we had a cold streak not long ago, and I said, how you doing today? And he said, I'm a little bit afraid it's going to be really cold. And so we talked about that. You know, I gave him some money. I said, I hope you can get, even if you have to spend this money on a taxi instead of a bus, because it's maybe too cold to ride the bus, so you can get yourself to a warming shelter. And I said, you know, could I bring you something? Could I bring you a sweater, some gear? I have some things. They're old. They might have holes, but I would totally love to share with you. And he said, you know, just talking to you, I feel less afraid. I'll be all right. And he wasn't just saying that to make me feel good. I've been talking to him for years, so he knows he can be honest. You can also give people support and encouragement, and you can give them what they need to feel supported so that they can work to undo what holds their fear in place. So let's say, for example, somebody lost their job, and let's say they have a couple of children or parents, someone that they caretake for, and they might be afraid that even though they feel responsible, they won't be able to buy food for the household, you know? So you could give them food or money, of course. You could talk to them about places, or even offer, better yet, to take them places where they could get food, which would help them not have to feel afraid of it, which would help them be more clear-minded, you know. Or if you had a long time and it was a nice summer, you could give them clothes, you know, clean out your friends' closets, and you could sit with them in a cafe somewhere and write up a resume and, you know, give them a chance. Give them a ride to an interview. Talk to them about how to do an interview or role play it. All of those things that were obstacles that were in the way to getting the job that would help them have income so they no longer needed to be reasonably afraid. That's a reasonable fear, that they couldn't feed their family. You could do that. And even if they didn't get the job, it occurs to me, even if they didn't get it, or if it took a long time to get it, sometimes does, months or even years, they would still be experiencing your generosity. And maybe just that support would help reduce their fear and cause them to be more fearless. A dharma doesn't always have to be fancy. You know, we're talking about ordinary bodhicitta, relative bodhicitta, ordinary kindness. If you saw a big dog chasing a cat, which you could see in my neighborhood, and in fact it could be my cat, and you thought that cat was in danger, you could just pick it up until the dog goes away. That cat's nervous system might calm down. They might feel the warmth of your body. And I believe that animals can sometimes feel our intention. So that's giving fearlessness. You know, we talk a lot in the Dharma about the complete conquering of fear that comes from not being confused in the Dharmic sense. But the everyday life stuff that I've been talking about is called skillful means. You practice the paramita of generosity and they get to be less afraid. That's just ordinary kindness. There are a lot of things that you could do in the realm of ordinary kindness. You can listen. Most of you know something about deep listening. You can listen to people talk explicitly about their fears. Sometimes all they need is to get what's on the inside outside, you know. You could provide reassurance, and you can bring up the truth or the fact that it's often reassuring to let someone know that everybody's afraid. Sometimes everyone's afraid. They're not weird. They're not weak. They're not necessarily beyond help or hope. They're just afraid. Fear comes and goes. And, you know, there are some things we should be afraid of. I think you can also play a kind of teaching or mentoring role with somebody to help them be fearless. Sometimes people don't really know what fear is. They only know it as a raw feeling, and they're not, in a kind of ordinary sense, educated about it. Like, there are different kinds of fear. There's terror, and there's a mild anxiety. Sometimes just sharing that kind of information is helpful for people, or maybe, you know, a book they could read or a website or something. I have a friend in Thailand who's a therapist, and I go and see him, not as for therapy, but in a friendship way sometimes. And one of the things that he does that helps me feel less fearful, and I'm not a very fearful person, but everybody has some fear, is that he challenges my doomsday scenarios. You know, or he'll challenge my negative thoughts, and he will identify them and help me identify them completely without judgment. It's just thoughts, old patterns of the brain expressing itself. And he will say, like, see right now, I bet you could let go of that. It's not really serving you any purpose. Of course, you know, we're meditators, so if you want someone to have the causes of their fears be removed, to learn how to relax and all those things, we do have meditation. That's part of what we can share with our friends. All these ordinary things. I'm not saying all of these things will change somebody's life, but they might feel relief from fear. And one of the things that Gompopa talks about is that if you help even someone with their health, it protects their body from stress, which also protects their mind, you could say. And the more robust their mental and physical health is, this is a matter of precious human birth, the more they have the luxury, the leisure, the privilege to think about things like awakening. So in a long-term scheme, then giving somebody relief from fear, even if it's something simple, like you're at a place and they don't feel safe, and you say, it's not great in here, you know, let's walk outside, and you help them regulate their nervous system. Like all kinds of generosity, the one who gives freedom from fear is the first beneficiary. Whatever you give, you receive. You receive. You might feel connectedness or joy, and in the long run, that will begin to create, if you're doing it over and over, a habit of generosity as a first response. Like, it can be the immediate option that comes to mind, the thing that you do. And because that generally causes people to be connected with you and close to you or safe with you or trust you or they enjoy you, it opens you. And that opening increases your compassion. And that compassion turns into clarity. And that clarity leads to wisdom, or is wisdom. You know, wisdom is requisite for awakening. Wisdom is a prerequisite for complete liberation. So when you're helping someone else in any way, but here we're talking about being free from fear or even fearless, you're actually helping yourself, but you're doing it in such a way that there isn't a risk of developing big self-cherishing, which of course takes you away from awakening. So I hope those ponderings, those musings were helpful. And of course, as always, I'm very interested in what you have to say about this as well. So think about this and practice with it and bring your learning back to the community, and let's talk about this together.